And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What?
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is Black History in honor of Black History Month. All of my guests are discussing a unique aspect of Black history. My first guest taught us what it needs to stop an entire generation of young Black people from wiping themselves out. My next guest is Al Capone's grandniece, and she's going to tell us what Al Capone was like as a family member. Now, you might ask, what does Al Capone have to do with Black history? Well, you're going to have to listen in, and she'll help connect the dots for you. As always, if you want to join the conversation, you want to call in and talk to somebody who is a member of the Capone family, you can call 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's 805-639-0008. Deirdre Capone is the last living member of Al Capone's family born with the infamous last name Capone. She now offers convincing and startling evidence gathered from decades of interviews and research on what really happened on the St. Valentine's Day Massacre back in 1929. Monday, as you know, marks the 82nd anniversary of the massacre. Deirdre's grandfather was Ralph Capone, who was listed in 1930 as public enemy number 3 by the Chicago Crime Commission. Much of her life, Deirdre has concealed the fact that she was a Capone because the name was so infamous. Only now has she made it public the connection to her notorious granduncle. Deirdre has also discovered new evidence in her research about the real man behind the legend of Al Capone. Deirdre, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm great, Bill. Thank you for having me on your show.
Well, it's a pleasure. First of all, you're a living link to history, so that's always fun, and I like to have thought leaders on the show. So let's dive into it, because the name Capone evokes all kinds of memories for people. But to me, the thing about Al Capone was he was much of an enigma. You know, on the one hand, clearly he was the crime boss of one of the most notorious crime gangs in all of Chicago's history. On the other hand, he set up soup kitchens to feed the unemployed during the Depression as well. So you've done all kinds of research on Al Capone over the years. Give us some insight to the man behind the myth, if you will.
The man that has been portrayed by the other 100 books that have been written about him have been written by people who have done good research, but all of the research has been done on police blotters and old newspaper articles. No one ever knew him, saw him, heard him, smelled him, cooked with him, or anything. So I'm bringing a different perspective to it. I knew him. He taught me to swim. You know, we did things together. We cooked together. So I'm trying to at least give people an opportunity to read a different side and then maybe soften their opinion of a man called Alphonse Capone.
All right. Now, Deirdre, that brings up an interesting point. He actually taught you to swim. I mean, he had the patience and the time he devoted to teaching a young girl how to swim. How did that go? What was he like as a human being, as an uncle, a granduncle?
Now, remember, I knew him after he got out of prison.
Okay.
So after he got out of prison, he was retired. And so he had a lot of time to do a lot of things like that. So I learned to swim in his Miami home in the pool that was all saltwater pool.
Mm.
So that's where I learned to swim by him. But I also learned to cook at the home up in Mercer, Wisconsin, when he was there with me for an entire summer.
Wow. I mean, that is incredible. All right, so he got out of prison. Now, if memory serves me correctly, he got out of prison because at that point he was dying of syphilis. Was he showing any signs of dementia?
You know, that's another myth. He was not dying of syphilis. Did he have syphilis? Yes, he did. Did a lot of people in that time space have syphilis? Yes, they did. But he was not dying of syphilis. He died of a massive stroke on January 25th, 1947. And no, he had no dementia. He taught me to swim. He taught me to play the mandolin. He, you know, taught me all kinds of things. So, you know, when he first got out of Alcatraz, my mother was pregnant with me, and she told me that he was very confused. He would go up to his sister and say, "What is your name?" And then he would go up to his brother and say, "What is your name?" And then go back to his sister again. So my grandfather, who was the oldest brother, knew something was terribly wrong. So they called Johns Hopkins, and he went into Johns Hopkins, and I spoke to the psychiatrist that took care of him there, not to the psychiatrist himself, but the psychiatrist's wife, and I had many conversations together. And there is evidence that his body was flushed full of chemicals before he got out of Terminal Island Hospital, which is is in California there.
Right.
And I am of the opinion, and nobody has argued with me on this, that I believe there was an attempt at a chemical lobotomy on my uncle.
Now, that's an interesting thing. We're talking to Deirdre Capone, everybody. Her book is titled Uncle Al Capone, and it's called that because she is the last living member of the Capone family that has the last name Capone, and we're talking about her uncle. Now, Deirdre, as you know, today's theme is Black History, in honor of Black History Month, and there's a connection between your granduncle Al and African Americans. Your granduncle may have been a killer for a living, but he also supported integration and equal rights. So tell us how Al Capone influenced Black history by his contributions to such people as Louis Armstrong, Nat King Cole, and even the Chicago Cubs baseball team.
My grandfather opened a nightclub in the city of Chicago called the Cotton Club, and it was modeled after the Cotton Club in New York. And he would have Black entertainers performing at this club. My grandfather discovered Ethel Waters. She was cleaning a hotel bathroom and she was singing, and my grandfather heard her and he talked her into becoming a performer. At the time that the Cotton Club was open in Chicago, of course, the Black people lived on the West Side, and my uncle had bodyguards for these individuals when they left their home until they got to the Cotton Club to perform. A lot of Black entertainers got their start through Ralph and Al Capone.
Well, I find that that's interesting. Also, a fact that came out in your book, which I thought was both amusing and interesting as well, was that Al Capone wanted to buy the Chicago Cubs baseball team. And had he bought the team, Deirdre, what was his plan for the baseball team, Chicago Cubs?
He wanted to bring Satchel Paige off of the Black baseball team and bring him in as the first Black in Major League Baseball.
So almost 14, 15 years before Jackie Robinson made his
debut
with the then Brooklyn Dodgers, he was looking to bring and integrate Blacks into American baseball. That's pretty incredible, and that's a great tie for our theme today, Black History Month. Now I'm going to switch gears, go back to your granduncle again, and talk a little bit about the money. Follow the money is always my attitude here. And you'll remember a couple of years ago, Geraldo Rivera did a special on TV where he opened up Al Capone's vault on national TV, and it was a complete
correct
bust because there's nothing in there except for some old bottles. Well, Al Capone,
it did make his reputation, didn't it?
Well, it did that, but it didn't do much for advancing history or learning more about your granduncle Al Capone, because Al Capone was reputed to have millions of dollars stashed away. And so if it wasn't in the safe that Geraldo opened up, the question is, what happened to the money that was allegedly hoarded by Al Capone?
Well, let's go back to the 1926-27. The income tax law had just been created, and at that time, less than 1% of the American people were required to pay income tax. And at that time, nobody sent you a little letter saying it's time, you know, fill this out, send this in. You had to do it entirely on your own. Also, for a very, very short period of time, the income tax law had a provision that any income that you made illegally, you did not have to report, because that would have been self-incrimination. So if you made any money with gambling, horse betting, you know, whatever, you did not have to claim that on your form. There was a tremendous push by some businessmen in the city of Chicago to get rid of Al Capone. He was planning to run for mayor of Chicago, and quite honestly, he would have made it. After the 1929 crash, he opened up soup kitchens all over, and he didn't care what color you were. He fed people because they could not, they didn't have any income. So when this whole thing came up, they got my grandfather and they got Al Capone. They got my grandfather first for income tax evasion for the same 3 years, and they put him in prison for 3 years. Then they tried Al Capone. My Uncle Al felt that he would probably either get off, in fact, he bought the jury, but then they switched juries on him. He thought he would either get off or he would get the same sentence that my grandfather had, 3 years. So what he did is, you know, there was no credit cards back then. There weren't even checking accounts. It was all cash. Cash was the ruler of the day. So Al gave his mother money, he gave his wife money, and then he put the rest of the cash in different safety deposit boxes and put them in different banks, most of which I have found were in Cuba. He took the keys for the safety deposit boxes and put them into a little vault thing, and buried it.
Interesting.
When he got, then, you know, all right, he went away for 11 years, not 3 years, but when he went and put, this is my opinion, when he went to the banks and he got these safety deposit boxes, he paid for a few years. You know, you have to pay the bank, you know, to keep your safety deposit box there.
Right, right.
When he got away, you know, for 11 years, those banks start to open up those safety deposit boxes to see what's in there. I mean, nobody's paying, nobody's claiming it. And I'm convinced that the cash that was in Cuba financed Batista Revolution.
Interesting. And now you have proof of this, Deirdre?
No, I have no proof of this.
All right.
So, I mean, that's a story that I'm putting out there because, you know, my grandfather told me, Deirdre, you will have nothing to worry about. We have money put away for you. Well, it's never surfaced.
All right. And you wish somehow that it would, but unfortunately it hasn't. We're talking to Deirdre Capone, everybody, the grandniece of Al Capone, also author of the book Uncle Al Capone. And Deirdre, I've got to ask you, the stigma growing up as a child with the name Capone, what effect did that have on your life?
It had a devastating effect. First of all, my father committed suicide just before my 11th birthday.
Oh, my.
Because he could not bear up. And the comparison that I would like to give to your audience, it's very similar to Bernie Madoff's son that just committed suicide. You know, people look at you like, all right, you're going to do the same thing that, you know, your father did. Bernie Madoff swindled people out of money. My family gave people what they wanted. They were involved in alcohol, they were involved in gambling, and they were involved in prostitution. All three of those things are legal today.
Well, prostitution is not exactly legal unless you're in the state of Nevada.
Correct, correct. But still, you know, it doesn't have the bad, you know, stigma that was attached to it back then. The alcohol and the gambling were the two things that had the bad, you know, stigma attached to it. But, you know, because you've got that name, people automatically assume things about you that aren't true, and they're based on what the media, you know, the picture the media has painted. So, you know, since this is Black History Month,
yes,
I can relate to that. I know what it was like for a black woman to grow up in the 40s, because that's the way I was treated. My uncle died on my 7th birthday. I'm a Catholic girl. In the Catholic Church, you make your first communion when you're 7 years old on Mother's Day. So they needed something happy to look forward to in May of 1947. So they bought me everything. They all came to the church to see me make my first communion. We all went back to the Capone house for a big party afterwards. Well, back in 1947, the Chicago Tribune and the Chicago Sun-Times had local editions of their paper every day. And the local edition in the paper on Monday said, Deirdre Marie Capone made her first communion with St. Philip Neri Church with her entire Capone family in attendance. Well, I was using my father's middle name as my last name. I was using Ralph Gabriel because my father wanted to protect me. But I had a name, Deirdre. How many Deirdres do you think went to school in 1947 at St. Philip Neri Church?
It was not a common name.
One. So 2 weeks later, every single child in my second grade class except me was invited to this girl's birthday party.
How devastating that must have been for you, Deirdre. I can't believe how fast the time flies by when we're talking about this. Deirdre, people are interested in what you have to say, interested in your link to American history. They want to learn more about you or your Uncle Al Capone or your book, Uncle Al Capone. Where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Please go to my website, UncleAlCapone.com, and on there I've got a calendar of events and an agenda, and I am going around the country right now doing book signings, mainly at the Barnes & Noble. So, you know, if you see that I'm in your area, please come and see me, and, you know, I'll answer whatever questions. Also, you can send me questions and talk to me on my blog at Uncle Al Capone.
That's UncleAlCapone.com. Deirdre, thank you so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you, Billy.
Thank